Hey modelers, welcome to the Model Geek Skill Modeling Podcast. Here we'll be discussing just about anything and everything as it relates to scale models, so buckle up for what we believe will be an exciting journey into the world of scale modeling. We really hope that you will download and make us a regular part of your modeling bench sessions. Now here are the geeks, Darren Cook, Scott Samo, Andrew Frill, and Andrew White.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 3 of the Model Geeks Podcast. I'm Frildo, and I'm here with my fellow geeks, Darren, Scott, and Whitey. Guys, what's going on?
What's up, man? How's it going? On models.
Yep. Snowing, man.
Snowing outside. That's what it's doing. It's supposed to get like, I don't know, 6 inches or something like that, which is great model weather.
Yeah, no kidding.
Can't go anywhere.
Nope. Too bad no snow days for us, though.
Oh, well. Yeah, more time for models, right?
That's right. It's been a...
That's it. More time on the bench.
We've been on a permanent snow day, last year or so?
Yeah. And you know, fellas, so on a day like today, what are you guys working on?
Well, I'm still plugging away on this Kinetic Hornet. I finally got all the base coats on and the paint done, bodywork's done, and moving on to the weathering, which is, kind of a pain in the butt, but...
You're flying through that thing, man.
Well, yeah, it's going pretty quick. Yeah. I'm glad. I thought I was going to be able to bust it, you know, out in by the 17th, like you were getting the 117 done, right? And, yeah.
Well, soon to find it. Jet number one hit a wall, but.
Yeah, yes, it did. And I still have it sitting over here. It's like my wife says, she says, are you going to throw this away? I said, no. No, I'm not.
That's a
because
good reminder.
It's a reminder. And it's a motivational reminder to keep playing. So, I'm starting to look at some different weathering techniques, and I really want to dirty this thing up. It's not supposed to be pretty. I think I've showed you all the pictures of the actual jet on the boat.
Yeah, man.
Cruise, and it's just nasty.
Now, are you going to put it on a base or anything, or?
Yeah, I'll just put it on a wood base or on a mirror like I do the other things in my cabinet.
It'd be cool to squadron patch next to it. It'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, I think I probably got one in the box over here, so that might be a good idea. Look into that. But.
The loadout on that, you're doing like the, first night strike?
Yeah, roll it. So they call it, the seed suppression enemy air defense loadout? So it'll be what they call double ugly, center line and wing tank. And then three horns.
Just one wing tank?
Yeah. That's where the double ugly, because it's...
asymmetric, sort of.
Yeah. So I'll have center line, and then the wing tank, and then three harm missiles.
Cool.
A FLIR, one Sparrow, and then two AIM-9s on it.
Oh, man. Nice. So,
yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah. Well, loadouts is something I never really gave much thought to until probably a few years ago. Sitting in our club meetings and listen to a couple. We had a couple Ordi guys in our group, hearing those guys talk about different loads on Navy jets, and pointing out constructive criticism wise, different loads and going, hey man, I brought an F-18E and I did the Revell E when it first came out, and the bombs that it came with. I don't know jack about weapons, so at least aircraft, to a degree, all right. But so tactical jet weapon loads, I don't know jack about. So anyhow, but the bombs that came in the kit, I put them on there, and Jerry was like, I asked him. I said, hey Jerry, would this jet be carrying these things? And he was like, no, those things weren't even around yet, or something like that. Like because I was doing I think I was doing the beginning of the second Gulf War type of deal, VFA 143 jet. But, from there, I thought, I got to start researching loads a little more. And it just makes, I think it makes the model a little more interesting, to my eye anyway, to see a weird load on a jet or, just something that's different hanging under the wings. And I certainly have done that with a few of the builds I've done. The F-15 Alpha that I did, I put a weird bomb on like a GBU-8 or something like that. TV guided glide bomb thing. Yeah. Anyway, and then later on in the episode when we talk about our build process, I'll touch on the model that I built that I'm going to discuss during that segment and why it's loaded the way it is. So, yeah. But anyway, what's on my bench is the, again, with the Desert Storm theme for myself that I've painted myself into that corner of, is is the my S3B, early S3B, I should say, because, again, doing research and discussing with people, Frildo for one, because he's got a buddy who was in the squadron. You know, I picked up a S3B conversion and from Phase Hanger, great little set, but the Sonobu shoots are completely different. You know, they in the early B, they maintained the full Sonobui shoot load. Yep. So I'm like, oh, okay. So I won't use that part, but other parts from the set I've certainly used. And it's coming along nice. It's that old Eshi S3 that's been around. And it's a great base kit, I got to say, for as old as it is. You know, so it's coming together and it's got nice fit, you know. Certainly with myself doing, you know, using the Paragon wing fold, the KMC cockpit, you know, that certainly has added a lot of work to it, you know, but out of the box, that kit, you know, for its age and everything, goes together really nice. Particularly the wing fit across the fuselage is great. You know, doing some test fitting earlier with it, I was like, oh man, there's like minimal cleanup on that seam with it, where they join. So anyway, that's what's there. It's coming along.
Yeah, I'm actually watching you closely with that build. I have that same kit upstairs in the closet, and I want to also have the decals for the plane that President Bush flew out to the ship, and I'm wanting to do that Navy One version. Mm-hmm. So I'm keeping a close eye on what you're doing, and I tell you, I do like that resin version kit. Man, we were talking about that a little bit last night. That thing looks like a chunk of lead, though, man. That thing's got to be heavy.
Yeah, kill somebody with that. The Black Dog wheel well weapons bay combo. My intent was I really just wanted to detail up the wheel well, but since it comes all as one piece, I was like, well, you know what, I'll use the weapons bay too. Obviously, it's all one piece, so. But I'll go ahead and open the weapons bay doors, even though it's, you know, again, getting back to researching, you know, they didn't drop torps during the Gulf War. And there were some jets that carried some Mark 82s. You know, talking again to people in the know, speaking with Benny Suggs, S3 NFO yesterday, he was mentioning some of the loads that different jets were carrying. The particular one I'm doing didn't carry these types of loads, but part of pre-flight is checking that kind of stuff. So I'm like, all right, it's sitting on the deck, getting ready to go. I'm going to have I'll pop the weapons bay open.
Yeah. And also too, it'll help you from having to try and fit the doors on over the
weapons bay. Yeah. You know, and that's the thing. Any excuse to avoid that, I'll do.
Yeah, man. Cause those things are notorious for not fitting very well.
Yeah. That's what I hear from everyone that's built them. That is, you know, going back to, I just said it had great fit, but that is one area of that kit that does not have good fit.
Seeing yours makes me want to go back and do it again, because I did the same mod you're doing, but I did the post ASW mod. So I filled in the extra sonobuoys and everything, kind of filled those in and removed the mad boom for the ASW deconfiguration of it and everything. And that was when I was first starting. I really hadn't messed a whole lot with resin. And as you know from doing it yourself, that Pargon wing fold, if you're off just a little bit on your wing cuts, it's just going to throw everything off. And I didn't measure correctly, and I had to go back and fill it and everything and blend it all in. And those the hinges on those things are like uber, uber sensitive. And if you look at them wrong, they'll break.
Yeah, I'm surprised I haven't snapped any. I'm going to knock on wood there. But.
And I had lost so many that when I went to go put the wings on, it just looked like crap. And
man, the trials and tribulations of modeling naval aviation.
Yes.
What a pain in the butt it can be. But yeah, the rewards you get when it's done and done right, right?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
And I made the mistake, too, of folding the tail on it. And like, why do you know, when he started saying he was going to do this, I was like, hey, man, don't fold the tail. Because
kicking back on the research, you know, when would they have the tail folded? Just never would
in that hangar bay.
Yeah, never when they were up on deck. So, yeah,
yep.
So
I shouldn't say never. Someone will post a pic saying, "Oh, there's one. Oh, yeah. They're sitting on deck." I understand that. Yeah, no kidding. I can show you pictures of Hawkeyes without domes on them too, but it's not a typical occurrence.
Well, you know, my Hornet, I'm doing the wing spread. And let's face it, we know that sitting in the junkyard behind the island prior to launch, wings are folded. You know, we're ready for. I just like the way it looks with the wing spread. I like the droop flaps. I like the whole look on it. And so that's my artistic license, right? I'm going to do it the way I think it looks good for me. It's going to be in my cabinet.
And it was like when I built that 32nd scale growler for a buddy of mine who I used to fly with. You know, I posted the pics and everything, and people were like, "Oh, the outboard flaps weren't folded weren't drooped when the wings were folded." And I'm like, "Oh, I'm pretty sure I've seen it." And I went online, you know, and there's like a gazillion pictures out there with the flaps and, you know, the flaps and slats lowered and the wings folded and everything. And I just think that, you know, I like that look on a Super Hornet.
Yeah.
When it's there at the wings folded and it's got the flaps all down and everything. I think that's a pretty cool looking.
See, my philosophy on Navy jets or Navy aircraft in general, if I can fold the wings, I'm folding the wings.
Yep.
I just dig them. Look, I like that look of them, man.
Well, I'm going to do one with the wings folded eventually. I just, I like the way it looks with the,
Yeah, 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 man. I'm with you.
Yep. And two, it saves space on your shelf too with the wings folded, just like the purpose it serves on the real thing, you know. Yeah. Save space.
I love when a kit gives it the option. Put it that way, like the Kinetic Hawkeye and the Cod, man, and most of the Kinetic kits actually, the S2s, you know, they all give you that option, and I think that's a great thing. You know, I hate cutting wings. You know, I did it with this jet. It was somewhat simple, you know, as long as you measure correctly, you don't, it doesn't get too technical. But it still was a lot of work to do. I think if I did another S3, I'd get the Wolfpack set that incorporates the entire wing and was not, you're not just doing the wing box.
I think too, the Kinetic Hawkeye and Cod, you can do it where if you transport it to a show or something, you can take the wings off. So you don't have to permanently attach them. So you can take the wings off and then set them aside. And then when you get to where you're going, you can put the wings back on. Can't you do that? Because you built the Cod. So
yeah, I also used aftermarket wing butts though. And I glued everything. And it's a pretty solid bond. So there's nothing really to worry about. Good thing about the E2, and the C2, likewise, you know, a lot of people don't really, when the wing comes back, there's a hook back there that hooks it to the tail, the jury strut, we called it. And so that thing it's on the kit as well. So you just slide that thing right over the tab on the tail and then glue the wing button. It's there, man. It's solid. It's not gonna flop around on you.
That's good. So, I was worried about the tracker as well, doing that wing fold and everything. But, because I scratch built the wing support struts and I drilled a hole in the wing, that when I attach everything, it's going to be nice and solid. And those things are not going to move when it goes together. So I'll be able to put those on. And then pretty much as long as nothing happens and they get hit with anything, the wings will stay where they're supposed to be.
Cool.
Scott, what you got going on over there?
Ooh, man, I tell you, I think my new name is, or my new alias is, quote, the squirrel farmer.
Yeah.
Yeah,
dude. True new call sign, you, squirrel. Man,
I blame all you guys because you guys are, you know, Whitey with his was F-117, so I had to go buy one of those. Granted, that one's still in the box, but I'm like, man, there's like just a few pieces. I could get this one done quick. So I'm all excited to get that one done. Still, I haven't made any progress on the SU-27. I did get the 190, the 32nd scale 190. I've got the cockpit completed. I used those Edward Steele seat belts, and they were awesome. They look like those HDW fabric belts. So they're the best ones that I've used. Super easy to work with. So that part's complete, and then I did get the 32nd scale MiG-21 in the mail, and broke bags, so to speak, started working on that one. So I've got the cockpit paint colors done. And so I'm just starting the whole process with, you know, getting everything painted, and haven't 100% decided on a scheme just yet, but I think I have a pretty good idea what I'm going to do. But yeah. And then I can't remember, somebody posted some pictures of this guy's 48 scale EA6A, and it was done in I can't remember the Playboys, the Marine Squadron. I can't remember which.
Yeah,
which, what. Yeah. Well, okay, squirrel. Yeah, I got squirrels running everywhere because I've been working on that one for a while now, and I'm like, oh man, I gotta bust that one out. I gotta start work. So I got like five models going at once. So, yeah. So the EA6A, I'm still working on that one. The MiG-21, the SU-27. Both of the SU-27s, and then of course the 190. So yeah, lots of squirrels running across the desk, but it's all good. You know, it's all good. Happy to try to remember this so I get some pictures posted up. But that's what I got going on right now.
Man, I thought trying to keep two was a chore. Keep two going, and I couldn't imagine having five projects going at one time. And Whitey, you're just a one plane, one project guy, right?
So I try to just keep it to one project, yeah.
And I always thought you were too, Scott. So I'm a little kind of surprised you say you got like five going. That's just wow.
Yeah, I don't know what in the world is going on around here.
No, believe me, I get the urge to jump into other stuff.
Yeah, I do.
You know, I mean, like right now, one of the projects dancing around in my head is, you know, you talk about stuff we've gotten recently. I got that CP-107 Argus conversion. I don't know if a lot of folks even know what an Argus is, but
I don't know.
That sounds like work.
Four engine turboprop. Or no, it's a radio, right?
Radio. Yeah. It was a Canadian Maritime Patrol plane from the 70s, 80s, early 80s. They retired them. Big gorgeous airplane, but I never even heard of the things. I mean, here I am, airplane geek all my life, and I've never really heard of the things up until I got stationed up there at Brunswick, and there was a big portrait of one on the wall in ops, in the base ops building. I was like, what the hell is that thing? And I saw, you know, CP-107, so I had to go Google it up, and man, I was just like, how did I, you know, attending air shows a bunch as a kid and heading up that way, I just never had seen one before. I thought they went from the P-2 Neptune right into the, you know, the P-3 CP-140, but in between there they had these CP-107 Argus things and transport wings out of the UK, make a conversion, limited run sort of thing, and I was like, man, I got to build this thing, and it's going to be a project, you know, and it's my next winter project for sure.
Well, I got two words for you, Whitey, and that's Desert Storm. So I don't know that they had those over there.
Yep. So no problem. I'm rolling with that subject, and I got, you know, plenty to build there too. Man. Yeah. I think after the S3, I'm going to do, I might roll into that Tornado just to break into the Allied side of the house there. So I think I might jump on that next.
Well, Frill, you got a couple projects going too, don't you? You got a couple going at the same time.
Yeah, well, as everybody knows, you know, get ready to take a drink. I still have the tracker going. And it's coming along. It's further than it was last week at this time. So it's one of those things that you get ready to move on, you're like, oh crap, let me get in there and fix that real quick, or I gotta do this real quick. And so it was the strobe light on the bottom. And now there's some pictures, like some of the Canadian trackers have a formation light on the lower part of the rear fuselage back there. So I'm doing a VS-30 S2E tracker, right? 103 at the shark mouth and everything. So finding good pictures of this thing, how it's configured. Cause like one picture I have shows where there is no mad boom on it, where they have removed the mad boom and everything. And it was configured for the bullpup missile. So I'm looking at that and like, well, so I spent a lot of time doing the mad boom and everything, making it removable so I can finish painting everything and be able to slide the mad boom in when I need to. Now I'm like, well, crap, I don't even need to do that anymore. And so trying to find a good picture of the lower fuselage to see if this tracker indeed had those formation lights back there. And so I'm going to finish that up and then I got to paint the strobe light and it's onto the top. And I can worry about that funny antenna configuration up there and how I'm going to attach the antennas to the fuselage, because in the kit, they just give them to you as flat pieces with no pin or anything in which to put them in. So it's going to be like a butt joint. So now I've just got to figure out how I'm going to do that where I don't get any excess glue and everything all around it and that kind of a thing. So that's where I'm out in the tracker. And then the A4M, I'm just finishing up putting the wash on and everything. And then I'll get on to painting the ejection seat. It's a phase hanger S-Pack ejection seat for it. And so I'll get that going and hopefully have these things done here for too long.
Escape pack.
Escapack.
Whatever.
Escape
pack. Escapack.
Oh, yeah, oh, Whitey God. And I'm not, we say it the right way, right, Whitey?
Okay.
Yeah. You know who to ask is Gabe. Gabe's the guy.
Yeah, who probably
did,
yeah.
Did he train in the A4s? Or were they gone by
yeah.
then? No, he was yeah, T-45. You know,
let's not take the word of the guy that turned wrenches on him. We'll take the word of the guy that sat on it. That's okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway. Man, well.
And real quick, through that little, for our listeners, that's 5 shots that everybody has to take because tracker was mentioned 5 times. Oh, that's 6.
It's going to be done, though. It's going to be done. At least the gear doors and the weapons bay doors and all that stuff is on, and that was the main holdup for a while. So now that that's done, that's out of the way.
Hey, Phil, I got a question for you, though. I think that, you know, because I had the similar project, you know, when I was working on the Mark 14. I mean, it took me 17 years to finish that thing. So I think you're nowhere near that, but I would definitely think that, you know, the effort that you've put into it and the product that you're going to produce, it's just super rare. Like, you don't see those things. And I would assume that you're going to be beyond excited when you get that thing completed and sort of like, you know, for me, couple of my favorite models are the ones that I spent all that extra time, super rare, you know. So I would assume that you put that thing in the case, man, that's like a monumental moment for you, you know, because it's cool to see stuff that's rare like that.
I just hope that it comes out the way I envision it, you know, and I have a certain vision for it, and I just hope it comes out somewhere close to that, and then I'll be all right. I mean,
cool, and how long have you been working on it?
Just over 2 years.
Okay.
Well, that's good. Glad to see everybody's working on something, which kind of rolls us into our next topic, you know. You know, the news and notes from around the model world, and, you know, I really don't, who knows when we're going to be able to go to another contest.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the next one up for us would be the Fairfax show, and that's been canceled.
Yeah, it's actually, is it canceled already? Well, I know that Richmond was canceled, right, for the Old Dominion Open. I think the Nova site had it just postponed right now. So, fingers crossed, that one might still happen.
Yeah, I haven't heard that it's been canceled. I know that it's been postponed, but we had talked to Jim like a couple weeks ago, and he didn't mention that it was canceled. So let's just keep our fingers crossed. Cause I think unfortunately, even still, you know, there's a lot more cancellations than there are shows happening. So that's kind of a bummer, but hopefully later this summer, later in the fall, you know, we'll be able to hit some shows, man. Although my first show, I don't want it to be nationals, and, you know, and the lucky chance that I might, you know, place with something, then that's it. It's done.
Yeah,
you know, you always have the display only.
That's true. That's true. That's true.
Well, too, I'm sure there will be some exceptions too, though. Like, so next year after Nats, if it, you know, like how they did that one show in Virginia Beach that we went to, the World One was tied in with the World War One air show too.
A regional that happened about 2 months after nationals, so they were allowing if you placed at nationals with something, you could still enter, which was a good call.
I think we'll see something similar to that, maybe, if the only show that goes on is the nationals. But man, imagine those tables at the Nats, though. Whoo, They're going to be chock full of models.
There's going to be so many. I couldn't believe that.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Darren. Yes, I think that, like, it seems like the first Nats that I went to in 2008 was huge. And then the one, I think the next one was 2014 that I went to. It was even bigger. Like, every year, the categories are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I know the last one that we all went to and for the Nuga, man, there were like, before the split, I mean, there were like, I think one category, I think it was 48 scale multi and single engine jets. Those two categories, like 70, between 50 and 70 entries in the category. And it was split, like, still even with the split, there was still like between 15 and 20 models per, you know, category. And they're only giving out a first, second, and third. So I always feel real humble if I win anything. If I get a third, I'm just like, that's awesome. You know, it's just because the competition's just, I don't know. Well, some of the build quality is, I mean, not do competition. I hate that word because the quality of the builds are just fantastic, you know. So there's lots of award winners, and sometimes it's very subjective, but still a great show, you know. Just always
good. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I'm hoping that Vegas happens. I'm totally psyched about it. Not any chance to get out there, really. I'm not a gambler. Right. So I don't make it to Vegas for that, you know, but to have a reason to get out there, check out the city, check out the folks, have some good back and forth with our fellow modelers. That's just going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it'll be a good time for sure. So the big news that came out is Tamiya came out with their 2021 release announcement. And what'd you guys think of that?
Woo!
Man. Some good stuff.
I think we all know the one that we're excited about.
Yeah. That F4B is going to be something else, man. If they do it the way they did their Tomcat, in which the CAD drawings of the F4 on their website and everything, it shows like that front windscreen is like how it is in their Tomcat. It's that, you know, the entire Ford.
That wasn't a CAD drawing. That was a build up.
That's a model. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that the actual build?
Yeah, the actual build. Because they say in the fine print, it says something to the effect of it's built in the English translation, built and smeared, which means they put panel liner on it to accent. And then they mentioned that some areas are painted gray. And that's why I was, you know, when we were texting last week, I was like, hey, man, it looks like the entire front windshield area, like the Tomcat, is all one clear piece is what it appears to me. And then also I believe, and I'm not, you know, etching in stone here, but it looks like they're offering a one piece closed option as well, a one piece canopy. Because just looking at, I mean, that or their fit is that good along the top of that center section of the, you know, the F4 has that center section. You know, it doesn't look to me like there's any sort of seam line there at all. I mean, it just looks like it's right into the next aft canopy.
Yeah, so, I'm wondering if that center section, it almost looks like that's a clear piece as well. I'm looking at the pictures right now, and all the stuff that they painted gray, I think are going to be actually full clear pieces.
I would think so. Yeah,
it's going to be cool.
And I mean, just the burner, look at the detail on the burner cans is freaking awesome too, man.
Yeah. And I love the touch with, you know, because if I build one, I, you know, even though I'm a Navy guy, most of the time, just my own personal, you know, taste, I like to build things with the everything extended. So, you know, wings not folded. So wings extended, flaps extended, canopies open. You know, I just droop the stabs just a little bit. That just me. I like that look. But this one, I think, would look super cool with the wings folded and canopy's open and the refueling probe popped out, like, you know, they're doing pre-flighting on it or something, sitting on the boat getting pre-flighted or something. Yeah,
see, that's what I was talking about earlier. You can fold them wings, man.
And you know, and that's the thing, it's to me, so it you're not going to have to fiddle with stuff and not have a solid joint, and you know, they do their homework. I mean, so I know that a couple of the, you know, when the release came out, you know, there was all kinds of talk. And so, you know, just look through some of the comments, and I was shocked to see how many people weren't all excited about it. And it kind of makes sense in this, you know, like I think if they came out with some new Inter X subject, whatever, that I'm not particularly interested in, I might, you know, I might be like, yeah, okay, well, that's great. But for you're an aircraft guy,
I can pretty see some people's point of view, you know, because you do have Tsukimoru certainly does a nice line of F4s, you know. So I would say right now are the cream of the crop as far as F4 kits go.
Yeah, yeah.
Still waiting for their Academy streets, but I think, and the Academy kit builds into a nice model too. It's got its quirks and everything, and I'll talk about that later in our main segment because that's going to be my subject that we discuss. Anyhow, but yeah, I mean, I hear you, man. Like, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of people going up there. What, an F4? Oh, great! Like, we don't have 19 of those out already. I know, I hear you, but. It's the engineering and the design that Jamie is doing. That they're entering into a whole nother realm of
things how kids fall together.
Well, there were some other really good releases that went along with that. The F4 is really, really, really hot. But you know, they got the new T-34 Russian tank that, and some really good car stuff too, man. The Datsun 240 that they did. And one I'm really excited about is the re-release of the 89 Sauber Mercedes C9. That was just a good-looking car. They come out with some good stuff. And then there's also, you know, Reifel models. They've come out with the Panzer, some other stuff there from Reifel. I mean, there's some good stuff coming out.
Yeah, man. Then you Border Model has their 135th scale BF109 G6 coming out, which is kind of like an interesting scale for a, you know, a G6 and everything. So I'm interested to see what that looks like.
Yeah, what do you get the thought is there with the 135 scale? I mean,
probably just so the armor guy, if they want to do a diorama or something and have you know, a tank and the aircraft in the same scale. Like, that's the only thing I can think of. But if it's a nice, I mean, I'm a huge 109 fan. So if it's a nice kit and I wouldn't mind putting one of those together. Just because, you know, maybe it's just a super cool kit, nice to build, you know? Yeah, it's just
cool scale, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like helicopters, why do they all start going 135th? You know, that's a lot of the helicopter kits that I have are all. Yep.
Yeah.
It's cool.
And then another, like, hard one that I can't really find online anywhere, but that's the Kinetic 48 scale GR1/3 Harrier. That looks like that'd be a pretty sweet kit, too.
Yeah, I heard that. I heard that thing is just like sold out everywhere. I haven't been able to find it. The other day when I was on, how many did Darren? Were you and I the only one that pulled the trigger on the? We peed the tea on the new Ming Super Hornet.
Yeah, if I did, I pre-ordered.
Yeah, me too.
Now I'm waiting on that. I don't know. I'm going to get that in my car at the same time.
Hey, that's shipping now.
Yeah. I don't know what I was thinking. Darren's like, hey guys, I pulled the trigger on the Hornet. I'm like, ooh, me too.
Squirrel.
Squirrel. I need a 22 around here and take care of all the squirrels. Yeah. I'm just excited to see it. I'm kind of getting a little off topic here, but I did see, I won't say any, you know, getting to specifics, but I did see a review the other day on the Revell 32nd scale Super Hornet. Now, I don't know how many folks have built that kit, but that, from what I understand, and I haven't even opened the box and seen it, but the in-box review was like, oh, this is, look at the detail. Look how great this kit. This is awesome, blah, blah, blah. And the build reviews that I've seen on this thing are like, you need sledgehammers and jacks and 20 pounds of freaking Bondo. Putty ain't going to work. You need Bondo to like get the thing to fit together. And there was one gentleman, really a renowned model builder, was working on it. And he finally just said, I'm done. I can't. It won. It beat me. And so he didn't finish it. But so Yeah, I'm just excited to see anytime to check out like a new Hornet, because I just, you know, being a Navy guy, I love the Hornets. But yeah, I think that hopefully that new Ming kit, hopefully it'll get here in a couple of weeks. It'll be something to look at. We'll certainly let all the geeks out there know what we think.
Yeah,
take a look at it.
I'm excited. I'm real excited about that one. I'm not a Super Hornet fan. I'm a Legacy Hornet fan. but I think it's going to be a great kit.
Man, so many new kits out there.
Cool.
They're going to be coming out this year, and the stash keeps growing even larger. And also, too, we want to thank the other podcasts that are out there, too. You've got the Plastic Model Mojo guys. You got the Plastic Posse on the Bench, the Scale Model Podcast, and the Just Making Conversation. It's real nice to have other podcasts in which to, you know, interact with and everything, which I think is pretty cool. And they've been very supportive of us getting started and everything. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah. I really enjoy listening to those guys while I'm building. It's some good stuff to listen to on my little AI device here while I'm sniffing glue and slinging some paint, you know, it's like guys keeping you company, right?
It was a good conversation with all of them last night. You know, we were recording here on a Sunday morning. We were all up last night. A whole gang of us doing that Zoom call and, having a few beers and shooting the bull and discussing modeling topics with all those guys from literally around the world. That was pretty awesome.
Really cool.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
I liked James Pub stories, man. That was good stuff. That almost brought me back home.
We had a lot of good bourbon recommendations too, you know, and like what goes into making a good bourbon and everything. And you know, the guys down there in Kentucky. So that was pretty cool. You know, it's really cool having others in which we can interact with and everything, which, you know, helps promote the hobby and keeps this thing going.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, Rice, promoting the hobby, getting people interested. And yeah, that's good stuff.
It's good to have something that you can put on and listen to while you're banging away at the bench and everything.
Yeah, sniffing glue and slinging paint.
Sounds like our motto. Yeah. That sounds like a good motto, you know. Sniffing glue, model geeks.
Yeah, sniffing glue,
sniffing glue, and slinging paint.
I'll put that on the back of our shirts.
Yeah, man, we got that. That's a winner. That's good. Heck yeah, cool, man.
So now going into our tip and tool of the week. My tip and tool of the week for this week is going to be the Shadowline Hobby Circle Cutter, which I think is a great tool for making circles. And that's what I use to make my wheel masks with. And they also have this, I'm trying to find the right word for it. It's not a bracket. It's we'll call it a guide, and it's shaped like an L.
Centering guide.
Yeah, there you go. Centering guide. So you can go through and say you like to, say you're one of those guys that likes to paint your markings and everything, and you're doing a British roundel, then you can go and you lay the centering guide down. You find your outer diameter of your roundel, you make your cut, you lay it down, you make your cut, and then you pick it up and you set the diameter on the inside to what you need that outer circle to be, that outer ring. You can set that, and with that centering guide, you place it right back down on top, and it automatically does what, you know, it's a centering. And so you make that next circle cut, it's perfectly inside of your last cut, and then you just pick it up again and you adjust the cutter to what you need for your rings. And you can make concentric circles for doing roundels and stuff, and you get them perfect every time without having to sit there and take the time to line everything up, making sure you got it centered.
I borrowed that from you, Phil. I have my own shadow line circle cutter, but I bought their earliest release that didn't come with that thing. And I will say this to them, if someone out there from that company, I see you can order new blades, but you can't order that centering device separately. I wish you guys would allow that, because I need them. But in the meantime, I borrowed Frills when I was doing the, you know, I need to cut out decals from a sheet, from a solid white sheet.
For your C-130. I did that 130.
And so I needed to be able to cut that nice, perfect circle. But first I needed to find the center and go from there. And so that's what that thing allowed me to do was, okay, Roger, that there's a center where my blade's going to guide. And I was able to just cut those things right off of that solid white sheet of paper to where I had the decal design that I needed. So that was real handy for that too. And also, I use the circle cutter for all sorts of stuff, man. Go ahead, Scott. Sorry.
Yeah, no. Where's the best place to pick one of these up? Where do you guys order them from? Because I've never actually used one. Site.
Yeah, I think I ordered mine directly from Shadow Hobby themselves. Yeah. I can post pictures of it on Facebook and everything, and I'll put a link for their website and everything. But I ordered mine directly from the Shadow Hobby guys.
Cool.
And I want to order up a couple extra blades just to have them, so in case something happens to the blade that I have that comes with it, because that thing is, I mean, it's like uber fine and like it's surgically sharp.
It is,
and it'll cut very, very clean circles and everything.
Yeah, if you go to www.shadowhobby.com, and that's where you'll find it.
Yeah, cool. I love using it to make my wheel masks. That's all I use now for wheels.
Yeah, and what I've done is I've gone to the local Lowe's here, and it costs like $24, and I bought a pair of digital calipers, and it gives you a readout, and you can set the millimeters, fractions, inches, whatever, and I'll take it. Like I was doing on the A4 wheels, and I'll just take it and I'll find out the diameter of the wheel. And I just go and however it was like 9.2 millimeters. And so then I just took it and I went to my shadow cutter and I just set it to like right below, nine, or right above the 9 mark on the cutter. And I just put it down and circle, cut it out and everything and test it to make sure it was good. And I had to make a tweak to it to get it just right. And yeah, once I got it, boom, I was able to crank out the masks for the A4M wheels. Easy peasy.
Man, I could think of a huge, just, with the T55 that I finished and I don't know how many wheels I had to make. That would have been, granted, I just used the, just a plastic template is what I've used to do wheels for years. But but there's nothing more precise than using a cutter like that with, Kabuki tape or the Tamiya tape. That would be perfect. I need to order one. I'll go ahead and grab one. Yeah, cool.
Moving on, it's that time. You guys know what time it is?
Mail call.
Moving on to mail. This week, I gotta admit, the response on the email, listener email, has been amazing. And got a few emails that I want to touch on real quick. And one of our episodes, we mentioned about a club and everything and how the importance of an IPMS club is to the hobby and everything. And one of the guys sent us an email. His name is Paul, who happened to be a local guy here. And he said he was new to the area and to the hobby. And he recently joined our Southern Maryland Scale Modelers Club.
That's awesome.
And he just, and he just finished up listening to our second episode. And he said that he really enjoyed it. And he said it found to be informative, entertaining, and he liked the carefree nature of it and the different segments and everything that we do.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool.
I think it's really cool that it led to another member, coming in to join our group.
Yeah. And then, so right after that email, we got another one. And this is a guy who comes in. His first name is Victor. And he's like, hey, I'm a fellow Pax River guy. He's been here. And he's a naval aviation enthusiast. And he said he built every monogram kit from back in the 80s. And he's into aviation history and everything. And then he followed it up with, hey, can I meet you guys? And is there a club to join? And so I forwarded him the email, our club president, Tim's email and everything for him to join. So he's interested in joining our local club. So there's another member that reached out. So that's good. And then, Robert sent us an email, and he would like to know more about the dry brushing technique that Scott was talking about last time.
Yeah, so I really appreciate Robert and all the other folks emailing us. I mean, it's fantastic. I think none of us thought that we would get the response that we have received, and so it's incredible. But for Robert's particular email, he's just asking some questions about specifically talking about the SU-27. That I'm going to be, eventually getting to working on the metal areas in the back where the engines are. And there's so many different ways that you can use that dry brushing technique you can vary the amount of the black that you actually put on there. So it'll give you a little bit of brighter sheen. Or you can use, just standard shading with the airbrush, or you can mix in some different pigments, meaning just very slight different tones you know, the same type of enamel based metallic type of paint. So, you know, there's a lot of different uses that you can use for it. And, you know, the last time that I actually sprayed metalizer through my airbrush, it's been a while. You know, I've just really, especially when I'm dealing with smaller areas, and that dry brush technique really just gives it it looks like metal. It's just a really different look. So I'll probably use a combination of, you know, the dry brushing technique that I use with the Tamiya flat black and using the different various colors of chrome. And I might add some color to that. But I also have some inks that I might use along with, you know, actually airbrushing, no kidding. Whether it's all clad or I like to use Gunsy super metallics, cause they're super fine and it's fantastic paint and they take a wash really well too. They're super durable. So yeah, I think that, you know, in the end of the day, I like to use kind of whatever material and, you know, kind of that look or that feel that maybe I'm looking in a picture or, you know, some type of a reference material so that I've got sitting right next to me. And then I'll start to figure out, would the dry brushing technique work the best? Just airbrushing, will that work the best? And so there's lots of different options there. The bottom line is don't be afraid to try something new. You know, that's how I found this little technique. I'm just trying to do something new. And, you know, the bottom line is appreciate the email. Please reach out to us. And you got any more questions, let us know. So thanks. Appreciate it.
And Craig reaches out to us and he says that he loves the podcast and hearing about our Navy days when we tell our sea stories and everything. And it says that it brings him back to his childhood of living outside NAS Millington. So back in those days when Millington was the site for all the Navy aviation A schools and everything. So
old Millington, I remember that back in the 80s. Wow. Seems like yesterday. The anchor. Yeah. Oh, the anchor. That's right. The anchor. Oh my Lord.
When, I was a fleet returnee going through A school. So right when I was going through, they had just moved everything from Millington down to Pensacola and everything. So I was like the second class to go through Pensacola down there. And, it's kind of bummed I missed out on the whole Millington because I hear all the stories, you know, about Millington and everything. And the giving blood plasma for beer money and everything, and then go hit the bars and everything. And
Speaking of sea stories, so when did you guys go through air crew school?
I didn't.
Okay. Well,
I went through in 93.
Okay. And then, and that was in Millington. Is that where, when did they
move? No, sorry. Yeah. Air crew school has always been at Pensacola.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so
the schools that were in Millington are your A schools, where you went to learn how to be a mechanic. All your technical schools, aviation technical schools were in Tennessee.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And then they moved them all down to Pensacola a few years back. But air crew school and rescue swim school has always been at Pensacola.
Yep. Yeah. I went through in 2002 is when I went through air crew school.
Okay. Well, Whitey, you were right before me, because when I went through OCS, you know, we were right across the street from the air crew school.
Yeah.
Whenever
you guys were lined up on the grinder, when we were too, sometimes your DIs would come over and jump in our ass. especially if we started, like, you know, if we're waiting to do our thing. You know, if you're eyeballing, or you know, someone gives a little snicker or something like that at one of y'all chrome domes over there getting beat on. Usually, it was like a staff sergeant or something like that. And they come rolling over and you know, play the game with us too. You know, think you can get down on your face, like, you know. And technically, we could tell them to go pound sand because we're not in there in a classroom or whatever. You know,
but you would play the game. Yeah, that's.
No, you wouldn't. You're definitely going to be like, okay, run that, man. I'll go down and give you 22, buddy. You know?
Yeah, the one I remember is very, you know, kind of similar, you know, happenings, just like you described. Like, we were out, because chow hall sucked. I don't know anybody that was like, oh man, I love going to chow, because you knew all the DIs were there and they're just going to mess with you. And so we didn't even do anything, and the DIs got mad at us. So they told us to get outside on the front lawn, and they called us little piggies. So they said, all you little piggies, get out there. You all want to eat? Well, they get out there in the front lawn and start eating. So, and snort. We want to hear you little piggies snorting. So our whole class was out there. You know, there's like 50 of us snorting. Like, we're all snorting and walking around on all fours in the grass. And some of the air crew guys were laughing. And the DIs went over and grabbed them and pulled them over and made them get into the grass with us. And then after that, I'm pretty sure they didn't snicker at us anymore. But it was, we went to the pit like 8 times that day. It was, they were just mad at us. And you know, that was like during morning chow, you know, so it was like 5:30 in the morning or whatever. And it was just, those were the good old days. I can't believe that's been like 20 years ago.
It was fun stuff, man. I was a fleet returning when I went through. I was already at, mechanic. I was a Hawkeye guy and then went down there. And, you know, so I'd coming from the fleet and then back into it was kind of more fun because you know that it's just all a big fun game and everything like that. Yeah. You know, so it's just, I'd just be laughing most of my day, man. Like, you know, and, you know,
we lost probably. You know, because you check in, right? And you all try to mentally prepare yourself. Sorry, guys, I'm getting off topic, but this is sorry. You're just going to have to put up with a C story every once in a while. That's just how it is, right? So, man, I mean, the first day, like you walk in and you're like, yeah, I'm going to OCS. I'm going to be a pilot. Yeah, this is great. And then the reality sets in and you realize, what do you mean I can't look at my food? What do you mean I have to like, you know, stare? What do you mean my bed sheets are not at a perfect 45 degree, you know, why am I getting dirty again? You know, it was just so, we lost in the first 2 weeks, we lost like, I mean, I bet we lost at least 20 or 30 people because we started off with like 60.
That's the process, man. You know, if you can't make a bed, we're not going to give you a fighter jet to fly. Sorry, dude. It's that literally
it was good. We started off with like 60 people and we graduated, I think there were like maybe between 25 and 30 in my class. That was it.
Nobody misses anyway. Them.
No, sorry for the sea story, guys.
They're driving boats now, man.
Pick a color, pick a ship.
Pick your president.
Good times.
Well, that's good. All right. Thanks for the email, everybody. Like we said, you know, if you feel free to reach out to us at our email address at contact@modelgeekspodcast.com and keep the email coming. You know, you are what makes our show. So we like interacting with you. And this is a great way for us to interact with our listeners and provide stuff that you guys want to hear. So on to that, we're going to move on to our main topic. And this week, our main topic, I kind of like it. You know, it's kind of one that, you know, I came up with. And, you know, what is your thought process going into a build? You know, like, what do you decide? When do you decide how you're going to do your next build? Like, how much aftermarket are you going to put into it? What are you going to do? That kind of thing.
You know, that's a great question. And it's one that transverses all the genres, right? Everybody that does it, if you're going to build a car or a tank, it doesn't matter what it is. The question applies, right? I mean,
yeah.
You know, how real do you want to make it? Do you want to do it out of the box? Do you want to add this, you know, to what color you're going to do? What squadron you're going to do? What NASCAR car? Yeah, whatever it is. That's, there's a lot there that goes into
and
that.
Darren, one thing, you know, we've talked about, and we probably say this 100 times, is that just like, you know, there's a bazillion different ways to get from A to B, but in the end, you end up with something. And it's like, so how did you get there? Yeah. You know, what led you to come up? Because I think we all know, you know, you can put a little bit of effort into a project and you can put a lot of effort in the project. And I think that's where, you know, as I'm getting older as a builder and I seemingly have less time to build than I did when I was younger. You know, I actually, the more I thought about this topic, the more I was like, you know, I think I probably put more effort into thinking about this than I thought. Yeah. It's not just a simple, you know, you see a picture, you see whatever. And I kind of thought that that's my thought process. But the more I thought about it, I'm like, you know, I think I put a lot more effort into coming up with a project because it takes me so long to build. So if I'm going to build something and, you know, and Typically I'm 6-8 months on a build. If I can do something in 6 months, I'm pretty happy with it. But, you know, yeah. So I think this is a great topic, and, you know, certainly look forward to chatting more about it. I don't want to bogart the beginning of the, of the topic. Cause I mean, I'm sure we all have some subjects in a thought process. So yeah, I'm excited to talk about this one. I think it'd be good.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's quite why I wanted to bring it up. You know, I just, you know, it's interesting to think everybody's different take on, you know, how they're going to do a build. And, you know, Whitey, what about you? You know, what's your process?
All right. So I kind of touched on it earlier, and usually it's something as simple as, oh man, that looks cool. I want to build it. Boom. Done. Story ended. Right. But then other times you see something and you go, oh man, that's inspiration kicks in, you know, I'll read about a historical event. So I'll point out, you know, the in particular, the F4C that I built. I want to do Robin Ould's plane from when he bombed the steel mills at Thái Nguyên, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And really, the inspiration came from seeing the in the squadron in action book, the F4 in action book. There was a pencil drawing by Lou Drendel, and you can get online and probably find this thing of the F4 hauling balls across, you know, low across a field, inbound onto the steel mill. And then I, you know, doing a little more research and then in reading Ould's book, his biography there, the book Fighter Pilot, he gets into detail describing that mission, you know, how they went about hitting it. And one of the things that stuck out there was, you know, we talked about this earlier in the show, the loadouts, you know, and I was like, oh man, that sounds like a cool quote loadout to do. And so that's why I was like, man, all right, I'm going to build this F4 and I'm going to do it as it was on that mission, you know, on 30 March 67. And so it, you know, two triple ejector racks of Mach 82 high drag snake eyes, 4 Sparrows, port side fuel tank, you know, outboard big centerline tank. And then on the starboard outboard, which really kind of piqued my interest, was the they carried an ALQ, I believe it was an ALQ 71 ECM pod. And these things were fairly new then, 67. There was a, you know, technology was coming along pretty quick with those things. So that's, you know, that asymmetric load of a big fuel tank on the port side, and then this little ECM pod over here on the starboard outboard, just kind of looked cool to me. And then throw in, you know, the stacked racks of Mach 82 high drag bombs. So, you know, that the whole process got born out of just me seeing some drawing in a book. You know, I was like, oh man, that's what I want to do. So I went ahead and did that. I used the Academy kit, built it. Oh, I never built straight out of the box, do I? I used some hypersonic stuff, you know, and again, hypersonic, he makes some great stuff for the F4s, for the cockpit, the air scoops. Man. He corrected the air scoops on that thing too. Jeff Kubiak, that's the owner operator of hypersonic. He makes some awesome stuff. I like his products. So, you know, that was it. And then the easy part was decals, because that Academy kit comes with serial number 64829 in the box for Ould's, I think it was SCAT 27. And it comes with a couple of kill markings as well. And the hard part for me was not putting that onto the model, because that airplane was not christened as SCAT 27 yet. You know, again, reading his book and doing a little online research, you know, he didn't, let's see, that was March of 67 that they bombed the steel mills. It wasn't until May of 67 that he, in that aircraft, had two more kills, that they added those kill markings. And the airplane, as it looks today in the Air Force Museum, is not how I finished it. I finished it just as a squadron line bird on the day of that mission.
Now, do you know, is that the actual Robin Ould's F4 that's in the Air Force Museum, or is it another one?
That, yeah, that is, as far as I know, you know, that's serial number 64829, because they sent it back to the States for just typical normal rework, I guess. You know, it was due for its cycle. And again, I recall this from reading in his autobiography. So the airplane it got beat up pretty good on that mission. You know, it took a bunch of flak hits and stuff. I almost want to do a post-mission bird and make it shot up like that, but I didn't. I did as it sits in pre-flight. But anyway, from what I read in the book, anyway, it got sent back to the rework facility there at Utah, Hill Air Force Base. And then while it was there, I believe his name was reaching a little bit of notoriety, I guess. And this, don't quote me on this, but I think that's when the Air Force was, oh, we should keep this bird, or somebody, you know, may have said, like, you know, I don't know how that process went. I don't know when it ended up in the Air Force Museum. I don't have that note, those notes in front of me.
Yeah.
The actual airplane that's sitting in there is, from what I understand, is aircraft 18.
Cool. Yeah, I read that same autobiography, and in there, in the early days, well, when he toward the end of World War II, he was talking about how, because he used to fly P-38s, and he told a story of when he just climbed into a P-38 that had like 8 hours on it, and he flew it to a scrapyard over there in England, and they just, while he was sitting there signing over the paperwork and everything, the guy was out there with the butane torch just cutting on it already. Just started going, cutting that airplane up and everything. And it's just amazing. Like, you know, a flyable P-38 today would, you know, worth a pretty good penny.
Yeah.
So Darren, what about you, man? What goes into your process?
Well, I mean, I'm not a history guy. And, you know, Whitey, I know you really deep dive into the history of a subject. And I think that's really his motivating part is the history of it. I'm more of just if it's a subject that interests me, right? But that does drive me to do some research. And I'll just use the Hornet that I'm doing now. And it's actually been pretty easy because I experienced it firsthand. It's not something I had to go back and read about. I do some of that. Not to the extent that Whitey is doing on his, but the first thing is it has to be a subject, something that just catches my eye, as was already said. That's cool. I want to do that jet. In this instance, it was a memory of mine, and that was the first night of the Desert Storm strike. That Hornet, I want to do a Hornet, so let's make it meaningful. And that was, and I've said this in other episodes, I model the subjects that I do because it had some sort of impact on my life. Those are the things that interest me. This one did. And that does lead me to some research. What was the loadout that night? Don't really remember the loadout. Hell, I was third class running around it, going on late at night, like midnight or something, getting ready to launch jets. What was on the airplane was not, I was more worried about what I was going to write on the nose, that HARM missile. Right.
Yeah.
which is some, now I got to figure out how to make those decals. Cause we wrote on everything. Right. So you have to have the handwriting on it to make it authentic. So I look at little things like that. What was the loadout? What, you know, I have some pictures I've shared with you guys about how dirty those airplanes were. So now I have to start thinking about, okay, so I don't want this to be a pretty airplane. I want it to be just nasty, grimy, dirty, like it was that night. So I take stuff like that into consideration. Colors, decals, you know, there's a lot that goes into that build process. And then it changes too. So as you go through the build process itself, we call it a rabbit warren. You might go down this hole or that hole,
you know,
trying to make it just right. And then you reach out to people like asking Gabe about the FLIR. Is this the right FLIR pod for that period? Yeah, I don't remember the FLIR pod. I just remember it looked cool sitting on the side of the airplane. I ended up wanting a FLIR guy. So what was the correct nomenclature? What was the right one? You know, we have our, the rivet counters out there, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Not trying to be that, but I still want it to be as close to my memory as I can make it. I had, I posted some pictures on the Facebook group, and I got corrected about the antenna humps under the intakes. You know, well, I didn't even think about that.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, so now I have to change my build process again. Do I pull those off and try and what did Mike call the reverse modeling last night, or unmodeling, or whatever it was? I have to go back and start sanding under intakes and fill holes.
You better.
I'm not. I've already redone so many things on this thing. I started looking at what I got to do to do that. And no, they're under the jet. Not a big deal. But
yeah,
that's all part of the process, is trying to just do, for me, enough homework to get it to where it is what I'm envisioning in my head. Does that make sense?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
So, yep.
I think the history part of it is really cool. I remember the Nationals in Hampton. I went down there, and the guy had a model of Pardo's push with the two F4s.
And he was
One. Yeah, I remember seeing that.
And I think that's a really good example of a historical type build process. It had to go back because it was perfect. It really, if you look at the painting, if you go back and read, it was all just Johnny on the spot. And so I think history of it, going back to what Whitey was saying, the history of the subject is a big part of it. Even though I'm not a big history guy, it still plays a role. So, but you know, there's more to it too. You know, what are you going to do for ordnance? There's just, like Scott said earlier, there's just so much when you really think about the build process. There's brazen. Do I want to go with the 88B? You know, the kit came with 88 C's, you know, the harm, you know, 88 Charlies. How deep into the details do you really want to get? You know, are you going to get brazen? Are you going to use a Hasegawa ordnance set? You know, I'm sure Scott, I can tell you right now, looking at his Spitfire that he did, you know, I'll kind of turn it over, segue over to Scott now in build process, because 17 years.
Yeah, that's
an example, you know, of how things change, man.
Yeah.
And I that's kind of an anomaly. I'm a duh. I think it went back to, I always wanted a 32nd scale Mark 14, and I kept hoping that I know it's and some would call it a fake Spitfire because it doesn't have the Merlin, but I like I call it a Griffin engine. Some say Griffon. I'm like, what? Okay, yeah. However you want to say it, tomato tomato. But the five bladed Spitfire, you know, with the nose on it, I just think it's just amazing. And so I always wanted to build one of those years ago, you know, but they just didn't, that there's a lot of work that you'd have to do at the time. You know, the Pacific Coast model kit wasn't out there. And so, you know, but Paragon came out with a conversion set. And so my wife, bless her heart, she bought me that for Christmas one day. She got it at John's Models. You know, this is back when I was going through flight school years ago. John's. Yeah, it was still a neat store. I always, you know, we're trying to go back to Pensacola this summer. And so, of course, I'm going to go bug him. I'm a little disappointed that Bobby's isn't going to be there. I'll shed a tear right now. Just quick moment of silence for that. But yeah, anyway, it was, the bottom line is that was something that was just, I always wanted a Mark 14 and I wanted to do it right. And the amount of effort and work that I had to put in with the Paragon set, it was a lot. And the, you know, completely thinking of, you know, what version did I mean, because how many different even versions of the Mark 14 there are. And I wanted to do a bubble top, a high back clipped wing Griffin engine Spitfire. I just thought that it would look really cool. And so the amount of research that I put into it and the time, it was a lot. And again, when I first thought about this topic, I was just like, well, I just pick something that I want to do. Okay. Next subject. And I'm like, you know, the more I thought about it, I'm like, there's really a lot more that goes into it. And I think the beginning, the impetus for me, that first planted seed of inspiration, was in an air show when I saw in the flesh a Mark 14. I thought it was just the most beautiful airplane I'd ever seen. I was like, man, it's just awesome. I want to build a model of that. And this is when I was a kid, you know, when I wasn't very good at building models. And I think the 17 years was just, put my Navy career into that. I didn't build as much when I was actually flying, 'cause you know, I'm busy being deployed. And a lot of times I just didn't have time to work on stuff when I was gone. And when I'd come home, you know, I'd work on it a little bit, but it was work. So it wasn't fun. It wasn't fun you know, sanding off everything down. So I'm left with bare plastic so that I have to rescribe everything. It wasn't fun cutting and hacking away. For me personally, that's not fun for me. So that was probably the biggest killer, was the amount of effort it took to finally get to the point where I could start slinging paint. And that took 16 and a half years to get to that point where it was ready to paint. So
well, I think it's amazing.
Well, I appreciate it. It was a lot of work. I'm super happy with the result, and I think I've put some pictures of it up there. I need to take some better pictures and, with a better background so you can kind of, but that's the thing. Like the pictures don't really do it justice, but I have probably maybe at least six or seven books that I used, and Tim Holland, thank you very much, Tim, for helping me out with lots of, research and numbers and stuff. So, and paints and versions and all that kind of stuff. But yeah,
Tim's our resident expert when it comes to the Spitfire, man. He's forgotten more than I'll ever know when it comes to the Spitfire. Real quick. You said a couple of things. One is fun, right?
Yeah.
And that's, I think, a big part of the build process. It has to be fun. Because when it stops being fun, what happens? It goes over to the shelf of doom, or it goes into the bin, right?
Or it takes 17 years to do it.
Or it takes 17 years to do it.
Yeah.
But let me ask this question. Because it goes back to fun. What about the kit selection? You know, if there's a lot that just goes into that alone, right? Because for it to be fun, I don't want to say it has to be easy, because we could dive down now into assembler versus modeler and all that other, those arguments that are out there. And, but there's no perfect kit, right? There's some that are close.
There's a couple that are close.
There's some that are close, but there is no such thing as right. All right. So we'll go to me a Tomcat kits, because I know that is one of yours that says is almost as perfect as it can be. Still has mold lines that have to come off of it.
Yep. And the nose gear.
There's some
goofy how they did the nose gear.
Okay. So as great as that kit is, it's not perfect. But let's go back to kit selection, because we want it to be fun, right? You want it to be a fun build. And I think that, you know, there are some manufacturers out there where you just want to beat your head against the wall trying to build some stuff, right? So I think that's a big part. What say
you? Yeah, Darren, I'm with you. I think that, that's why I was hoping and praying for so long that, especially when that first Mark 9 32nd scale Tamiya Spitfire came out, I was like, oh, they're going to do a Griffin one. Come on, please, please, please. And then, of course, they didn't, and they haven't. And if they did one, I'd build it, even though I've got one sitting in the case. But I think that, that's when there's a good company, and I don't want to, be partial, but I think there are some that are just better than others. And when I see a subject that maybe I wouldn't have been super interested in, when a kit comes out that's near perfect or is just a joy to build, it will definitely influence my choosing of a kit. Like I might pick a subject that I would not have built, but because I know that, say, Tamiya or Hasegawa had come out with X kit, I'm like, man, I could do a really cool version. I could do this or do that. Then you're not going to fight it. It's not going to fight you. You're going to enjoy it. And that Tomcat for me was the most enjoyable build in a long, long time. I mean, I think I built it in just a matter of months. I think it was maybe three or four months it took to build that. I mean, it's an enjoyable kit. And, I've built lots of Tomcats before. But man, when that one came out, everything stopped and I worked on that one. So yep, that was an influence. Just literally the company, the quality, and that's a great subject too. But yeah, it was a big influence.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you on that Tomcat, Scott, because I think you and I were working on ours around the same time. And yep. I would have to admit that was like probably the most stress-free build that I've ever had. I mean, everything, the engineering behind it is just amazing. And the thing literally just fell together, and it's just an amazing kit. And when I built mine, I'm kind of like Whitey too. You know, I like the whole history thing behind it. And so when I was building mine, I wanted to do the VF-41 first Gulf of Syria shoot down.
Sidra,
thank you. And like Whitey, I was, you know, do I want to do a post or a pre shoot down or a post shoot down? Because the post shoot down, they actually painted a silhouette of a an SU-22 on the nose of the airplane. And so I was like, oh man, what do I want to do? And so I decided to go with the pre-launch because it was an Alert One aircraft. And so I went ahead and did the alert loadout on it and everything. So I went through and I researched what, you know, online and everything of what the actual loadout was for that airplane. And so, which luckily Tamiya gives you that stuff in the box so you can do it. And so I did that and everything and depicted it on deck right before launch and everything. And so that's what my thought process was on my Tomcat, because I want to do the SU-22 as well and have it sitting there next to it. It's kind of like the foe versus, you know, adversaries facing off kind of a thing. I think it'd be kind of cool to do. And with the tracker, you know, as a kid, my dad being, you know, being a Navy brat, my dad being in the Navy, he was around S2s for a while when we lived up in South Weymouth. And I've always loved the tracker. I remember seeing it at air shows and everything, and I've always wanted to do a tracker. And, of course, the Collect Air kit came out back in the late 90s, early 2000s, I want to say. But it was a full-on 100% resin kit, and you can't ever find it. And a friend of mine, Gil Hodges, he's, like, built three of them, and they all look amazing. And so I could never find that kit. And so, which I'm kind of glad, because that was probably way advanced for my skill set at the time. And when Kinetic came out with their 48 scale tracker, I searched and it was always sold out everywhere. But then a Talerieri or Italeri reboxed it, and I was able to get an Italeri boxing of it. And so when I did, and I knew deep down, I wanted to go all out on this thing. I wanted to make it look the best that I could. So I went and I bought the Vector engines, the R2800s. I bought the Edward Big Ed set. I bought the Ares wheels, which I ended up not using. I ended up getting the Royal Resin wheels for it because they're the more correct size. And I went and I bought the D-mold nose correction and the wing nacelle correction. And ended up not using the nose correction because it changed the profile enough that I couldn't use the Edward stuff because I wanted to detail the cockpit. So then when I was doing that and everything, and then got to looking at it, it's like one of those things where you pull string and more things come undone. And I was looking and I was like, oh man. And they don't give you anything to plug the hole between the pilot and co-pilot seat. So you could see all the way back to this thing, all the way back. And I was like, well, I can't have that. And so I got a hair at my ass and was like, well, let me try scratch building that rear, the operator area. And so I did. And that took me quite a while to do all that. But I went through and I scratch built the entire rear cabin area, which worked out good because it filled in that area. And now when you look through the windscreen and I cut out the overhead hatches above the pilot and co-pilot so you could see up in there, because it was just, there's no way you're going to see that. But then there was a drawback to that, because doing that, I ran out of places in which to stash nose weight, because this thing is a tail sitter. And I put weight behind the engines. I put weight up in the nose wherever I could, back behind the operator consoles. And that sucker is still a tail sitter. And I was like, oh, man. And looking back on it, would I have gone with the D-mold nacelle correction? I don't know, because unless you know, it's like one of those things that once you see it, you can't unsee it. And when I saw a picture of a tracker that was in like a real, like a 60 degree bank turn and everything, and you could really tell the Coke bottle shape of the nacelles and everything. And so I'm like, oh yeah, I got to fix that. And so I went, and that's what drove that addition.
Yeah, I can't remember who mentioned it a little bit earlier, but that, there's a delicate balance, at least with me, there's a delicate balance between how accurate do I want to be with the model And then how artistic do I want to be with the model? And sometimes there's a struggle in me with how do I want to lead? So I think I try to have a balance of, yep, it's accurate, that has the correct loadout or whatever, but I don't worry if there should be six rivets on that particular panel and I only have three. Like, you know, I try to make sure that if there's fairly big mods that would need to be done that are obvious, well, I try to make it correct. But what I'm learning as I'm getting older is that I care less and less about that stuff. And I think I enjoy more having more models in my cabinet, maybe that aren't perfect, vice less models, and maybe they're a little bit more accurate. And, you know, that's just something that's kind of changed. I mean, even now, you know, about the most I put in aftermarket wise is if I'm doing, you know, an aircraft is a seat, an aftermarket seat. That's about all I really do. Most of my models that I have, everything's out of the box except for the seat. And it's cut down on build time. And that's just me, you know. And I think we all have our different methods and thought process that we do when we come to a build. But for me, what I'm learning is I'm getting a little bit older. We're all, you know, well, I guess one of us is under 50 here, but I have less time. So I'm like, I'd rather spend more time painting because that's my favorite part. So if I had the least amount of corrections and stuff I have to do to the model, for me, the better. So I focus on the paint stage and the overall finish. And that's almost kind of what I'm thinking about from the get-go is like, okay, what's the minimal amount of stuff I have to do so I can get to painting? And so that's a big influence in me as well.
Darren kind of touched on that when going back to kit selection, you know, if there's a better kit of something, that's what I'm going to roll with. And, you know, last night in our discussion with the other model podcast folks, Stuart touched on it too, with introducing new folks to the hobby, kit selection. You know, don't give a new guy a crappy kit. You know, give him something he's going to enjoy building. Yeah. And that
to me,
that
way, fire or something like that. Yeah, the 48 scale kit. Yeah, easy peasy. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a good thing to keep in mind. If anyone approaches me ever, you know, hey, I want to build a model. What do you suggest? You know, hey, let's go. I'll give you one of these.
That's a great point. And I actually had one of my old neighbors reach out to me just yesterday. I got a text, and I haven't talked to Jimmy in so long. You know, he goes, hey, D-Ran, I need some model building advice. You know, he's wanting to break back into it with his kids. And, you know, we were talking something as simple as glues. You know, it's like extra thin. This is what he's like, oh my God, this stuff is just amazing. You know, you got to look at the skill level, right? And we have folks out there that are just starting. So, you know, going back to the build process, at what point do you look at, well, it just needs to be a good kit that's out of the box. And I mean, we talk about adding resin, right? The landing gear and the seats and all this, you know, you don't have to have all that stuff to have fun and build a model. You don't need to worry about the engine nacelles. You don't have to worry about, does this hump belong there? Just build it, man, and have fun doing it, right?
Yeah.
Great kits for getting people into the hobby, which is, you know, a topic for another day and everything, but Airfix and their recent 172nd scale kits. I mean, those things, from what I've seen online, those things go together quick, and they're nice looking replicas when you're done, you know? And so there's not a whole lot to them. You get, you know, you get enough detail to keep you interested. And then before you know it, you're ready for paint. And then you can go on, and then you can try your different paint techniques or whatever you want to do. And so I think, you know, those Airfix kits would be a good starting point for that. So those would be good kits to point someone to in that direction, you know?
Yeah. And I, you know, when I first started, I mean, I, the first kits that I always worked on were 72nd scale kits, and cause they're simple, and then moved up to 48. And then of course, you know, my favorite really is 32nd scale. It's just, you know, it just takes a long time to build. But, I think, and, you know, as I progressed and kind of got better as a modeler, the whole process and the thinking about how I go about building something changed. You know, as I matured as a modeler, my thought process changed. I mean, how I think about building a kit now at 50 and been doing this since I was 5 or 6 years old is different than when I was even a teenager or in college. Or, you know, I feel like every kit I try to get a little bit better and a little bit better. But to be honest with you, and we've talked about this in our groups, right? That I'm not getting any younger. So I am trying to, just build a kit and enjoy it. And I'm not sweating the details like I used to. Because I really enjoy having models built and having fun and not worrying about panel lines and worrying about, you know, because I love to take the monogram kit and I don't rescribe them. I just build them, you know, and they're, I've really enjoyed it. Believe it or not, that EA6A, a couple of big seams you got to fill, but that's why they make putty. So I fill them and I move on, and you know, I'm getting close for that EA6A to start painting it. You know, it was just what I love. So, and the whole idea, like when we did our March Madness build, Darren, you didn't get to participate in that, but we challenged each of us. Yeah, we should do another March Madness build. And God, has that really been almost a year? Holy
yeah, man. 2 months. Wow. Just right around the whole COVID thing hit right around that time.
Our group, we built, you know, we built a kit in a month, start to finish. And I think we all made the deadline, and it was a blast. I mean, it was so much fun. And it completely changed my thought process on what am I going to work on now? And I'm leaning more towards, you know, kits that build well, you know, simple kits, not putting a lot of stuff into them, and just, you know, having something in the case and getting back to, like, because when you're young and you're a kid, you're not sweating seams, you're not sweating panel lines and details, and you know. But that's just my thought process. I think some folks, you know, gravitate more towards the accuracy and it has to be correct. And if that's what makes you happy, then you do that. But for me, I just want to get to painting. That's it.
Sling and paint.
No, sniffing glue and sling and paint.
Sniffing glue and sling and paint.
You know, and that's like going back to that tracker real quick, you know, and I just...
Oh, my God.
I know.
I'm drunk, man.
That's going to be
15 shots over here.
I don't think I've put any kind of more detail or effort into a model ever before. And it's coming along good, so hopefully I'll get it done here before too long.
You got to take it to Nats?
I don't know. It depends how it comes out. I mean, if it keeps going the way it is, maybe. Maybe
it won't be done.
It probably won't be done. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the same for me, right? The Spitfire is the most effort I've ever put into any one model. And but, you know, in the end, it was worth it. And I love it. It's fun.
It's cool. Yeah, man. I think, you know, great topic today. You know, thanks, guys, for your insight and everything and what goes into your build process. You know, I'd like to thank all of our listeners out there and hope they get something out of this and enjoy it just as much as we did.
Yeah, I think it's great. I you know, most of the, you know, here we are on episode 3, and the overwhelming support that we've received from everybody out there, you know, you folks listening, you know, hearing my voice right now, hearing what we're doing, what we're trying to put together, it's all about being able to enjoy the hobby, experience it with other people, interact with folks. I think it'll be a lot of fun when we're back to being able to go out in public freely and have shows that we can go to and meet folks. And
one day,
you know, one day, right? It's just great to be able to share the hobby with folks, because hopefully everybody understands, like, we are beyond passionate about this hobby. And, you know, I think we're living in a great age where the kits that are coming out are just unbelievable, and it does make the hobby fun. I am beyond excited about that Tamiya F4, and it goes into everything that we just talked about with the main topic. You know, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. And I don't know, man, I'm having a blast, you know, with the podcast, and I wouldn't want to do it with a better group of dudes, and this is fun. So, and thanks to all the listeners, man. You guys are awesome.
Yeah, thank you to all the listeners out there. And between, you know, when we go do our next show or our next episode, you know, be excellent to each other, and let's get out there and build a model.
And post it on our Facebook page.
Yes.
We'll see pictures of it.
Yeah, let us see your work, you know. if you got something that relates to, you know, this show's topic, go ahead and put it up there. That's why we have it, is for, you know, you listeners to be able to interact with us and show us your work, because, you know, I, you know, like everybody else, you know, I get inspired by seeing other people's work, and seeing something out there will make me like, oh yeah, man, I want that kit. I want to go jump on that. The next thing you know, I'm like Scott, and I have like another squirrel running around, and I'm going down that rabbit hole, and the tracker's still sitting over there waiting to be finished.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how it goes, man. It's all good. All good, brother. All good.
All right. Well, you guys, thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you guys next time. Later from the Geeks.
See ya.
See ya.